This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, October 30th, 2006. From KPFA in Berkeley, I'm Aaron Glantz, filling in for Aldo Bogado. The Department of Homeland Security declares victory on border security. Mexican police move into Oaxaca City after the killing of three people, including an American journalist. And the FCC holds hearings on media ownership. Those stories and more after the headlines.
I'm Nell Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Pakistani helicopter gunships destroyed an Islamic school purportedly used as an Al-Qaeda-linked training camp near the Afghan border, killing nearly 80 people. Masroor Hassan reports from Islamabad.
Sources in Islamabad are saying that last night's attack in Bajor, which killed an estimated 80 civilians, including women and children, was carried out by U.S. Air Force from across the border in Afghanistan to scuttle an important deal Musharraf was going to sign with the tribal chiefs in a meeting scheduled for 10 a.m. this morning. ISAF and NATO believe a recent controversial accord led to increase in Taliban attacks against Afghanistan. There's also news in the British media that NATO is considering taking over control of the tribal belt along the border linking Pakistani port Gwadar with Kabul for an oil pipeline with Central Asia. Masroor Hussain, FSRN, Islamabad.
The United States Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction now admits that thousands of sophisticated weapons earmarked for Iraqi security forces are missing from the U.S. Department of Defense, and government officials say it is unlikely that they will be recovered. The Pentagon cannot account for 14,030 weapons that include assault rifles, machine guns, rocket-propelled grenade launchers, and semi-automatic pistols. Jerry Burke spent 2 years in Iraq as a national security advisor to the Ministry of Interior. He explains how the weapons could have gone missing.
At the very beginning, when we were training the police at least, we would issue pistols to the graduates. And some order of, say, 10 or 20% of them never reported to work. Others would go to the station, report to work, and have their weapons taken by a senior officer who might then sell it on the open market. Other cases were when stations were attacked or overrun, that weapons inside the stations were taken, including AK-47s and possibly some heavier equivalent to 50 caliber machine guns.
It will be virtually impossible to track down the missing arms since the Defense Department registered the serial numbers of only 3% of the weapons earmarked for Iraq. Fresh from a landslide re-election victory, Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva was set to begin talks today to forge a legislative agenda and a broad-based coalition in the Brazilian Congress. Rosa Caldas reports on the election results from Sao Paulo.
Despite all the recent government scandals, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva was re-elected with almost 61% of the popular vote. His opponent, Geraldo Alckmin, ex-governor of Sao Paulo, garnered at just 39%. Lula justified his victory, arguing that it was a conquest of the Brazilian people and had satisfied him as a politician. According to research, Lula had the massive support of the poor and less developed people. He will lead Brazil until 2010. Rosa Caldas in São Paulo, Brazil, from Free Speech Radio News.
Ivo de Boer, the head of the UN Climate Treaty Secretariat, says that the industrialized world's emissions of greenhouse gases are growing again, despite efforts under the Kyoto Protocol to cap them and stave off global warming. Heather Rizvi reports from the UN.
UN researchers say during this period, the Eastern and Central European nations were mostly responsible for more than 4% increase. The UN Framework Convention on Climate Change requires 35 industrialized countries to reduce greenhouse emissions by an average of 5% below 1990 levels by 2012. The report urges industrialized countries to invest in sustainable development projects in developing countries, besides introducing further cuts at home. The United States, the world's biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, is not a party to the UN Convention on Climate Change. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Heather Rizvi at the United Nations.
And in Britain today, a senior British economist released a report saying that if countries do nothing about climate change, it will devastate the world economy on a scale of the world wars and the Great Depression. Study author Sir Nick Stern says it will take fundamental changes to the world's economy to counter the threat from global warming.
Managing a transition to a low-carbon economy cuts across most areas of activity, and multilateralism is crucial to success. It cannot be left only to energy and environment ministers, important though they are. This is about managing an international economic transition.
Stern says acting now to cut greenhouse gas emissions would cost about 1% of global gross domestic product each year. Republican Representative Duncan Hunter of California announced today that he's entering the upcoming presidential contest.
As I finish my final 2 years as chairman of the Armed Services Committee and serve you, I'm also going to be preparing to run for president of the United States in 2008.
Hunter would lose his Armed Services Committee chairmanship if Democrats take control of the House after the November 7th election. Former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi and British lawyer David Mills have been ordered to stand trial on corruption charges. Milan magistrates had accused Berlusconi of paying Mills, the estranged husband of British Culture Secretary Tessa Jowell, a kickback of $600,000 for not revealing details of Berlusconi's media empire when he testified in two court cases. Both men have denied wrongdoing. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Nell Abram.
Department of Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff told reporters in Washington today increased border security operations have met with success. But immigrants' rights activists say Chertoff's policies have been devastating to immigrant communities. FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff praised the results of the first full year of new border security policies.
We started to have a deterrent effect on their willingness to come and try to cross the border.
Secretary Chertoff's media briefing compiles the data from an entire year of immigration enforcement. But the statistics don't differ much from the last briefing he gave 2 months ago. But the timing is opportune, just 8 days before Election Day, where the Republican Party, who prides itself on being tough on border security, is at risk of losing the House of Representatives and possibly the Senate to Democrats. Secretary Chertoff highlighted multiple DHS programs aimed at curbing unlawful immigration. The hiring of an additional 1,500 border security agents, the awarding of government contracts to develop a technological border, expedited removal of undocumented immigrants, and interior enforcement at the workplace, which has deported 180,000 immigrants living and working in the U.S., Chertoff says. All of these initiatives, Chertoff says, has reduced the number of immigrant arrests by 8% compared to last year. To DHS, that means fewer people are attempting to cross the border.
This kind of totally comprehensive strategy is what is required if we are going to solve this problem that's plagued the country for decades once and for all.
But Jason Ackleson, assistant professor of government at New Mexico State University, says a variety of factors determine how busy the border crossings are.
Weather, for example, has something to do with the amount of people crossing, the economy, another. So it's difficult to totally isolate one thing as being the only factor in changing apprehension policy.
Plus, Ackleson says the latest numbers don't give the whole picture.
They say they're up by 8.4% compared with FY 2005. And if you do the calculation on that, that looks like this year something like 1.2 million people were apprehended on the border, which is an increase over 05 and 04. But actually, if you go back to 2001, in that fiscal year, 1.2 million people were apprehended, so we're about on par there. And then in 2000, 1.6 million people were apprehended. So it's important to sort of see this in the larger context of immigration policy that tends to kind of ebb and flow.
Reverend Luis Cortez is head of Esperanza USA, an evangelical group that has several million followers across the country, many of them Latino. He says the focus on border security and interior enforcement without complete immigration reform is having a devastating effect on many families in his community.
The immigration reform means that sitting at a table today, you have a family of five, a family of seven, a family of eight, and each one has a different status. It's really hard on a lot of our families. Most of the undocumented in this country didn't climb over the border. They came in legally. INS is broken, so their choice is to leave the country or to stay in the country illegally. And so they stay, but they have jobs, they have families.
Border security and targeted arrests of undocumented immigrants are currently the only components of immigration reform. President Bush signed into law last week a bill that authorizes the construction of 700 miles worth of fence along the U.S.'s southern border. Although that law is unfunded, $4 billion have been allocated so far this year in congressional appropriations to implement other border security provisions. In his briefing, Secretary Chertoff mentioned the need for a temporary worker program, which is backed by the administration, but does not go far enough for many immigration advocates. Advocates say a culture of fear has already been created among the immigrant community through increased detention, a decrease of judicial review, and the partnership of local law enforcement with federal immigration officials. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Mexican federal police have moved into Oaxaca City to take the city from residents who have been governing themselves for the past 5 months. Although the move has been painted by federal authorities as an effort to restore order, the tens of thousands of local residents who came yesterday to impede the advance of police line would not agree. After police broke through barricades with bulldozers, water cannons, and armored personnel carriers, helicopters constantly circled overhead for hours afterwards, and the houses in some neighborhoods were subjected to warrantless search raids. Shannon Young reports on this weekend's events.
The helicopters started circling early Sunday morning and kept hovering over the city center into the night. It did not come as a surprise. President Vicente Fox announced Saturday morning that he would send the federal preventative police into Oaxaca. By midday Saturday, large numbers of the militarized police force, known as the PFP by its initials in Spanish, had landed at Oaxaca City's airport. The PFP operation on Sunday hit different entry points into the city. Tens of thousands of neighborhood residents came out to stand in front of a large PFP contingent as they advanced towards downtown along the superhighway from Mexico City. One of the most significant points of resistance was at a barricade installed at the Viguera traffic circle. Neighborhood women stood on the front lines holding flowers, Mexican flags, and religious symbols. Others, like this man, drew blood in front of the line of watching riot police.
The government does not exist. The most correct thing is for you to speak to your superiors. The state government has so far killed 17 people. Are you going to add to that number? I'll leave that with your conscience and your big boss, Carlos Abascal and Vicente Fox, who should be here to see that we are not just a handful of people.
Police used tear gas, armored personnel carriers, and water cannons to try to move some 30,000 neighborhood residents from the highway into downtown. The demonstrators laid down in the street to impede the advance of the police vehicles. Unable to pass the barricade at the Viguera traffic circle, the police contingent took a different route, with support from helicopters. Along the way, at least two protesters were killed. 26-year-old nurse Jorge Alberto Lopez died instantly from the impact of a tear gas canister to his chest. Professor Fidel Garcia died from massive head trauma. A third rumored fatality is reportedly an unidentified 14-year-old boy. Presidential spokesperson Ruben Aguilar denies that anyone died in the police operation. President Fox announced the decision to send in federal troops after a series of deadly attacks Friday afternoon killed three people. One of Friday's dead was New York indie media videographer Brad Will, who was shot while filming a shooting attack on residents of the Santa Lucia del Camino municipality, just outside of Oaxaca City limits. An ambulance never came to the scene, and local residents did what they could to evacuate Will to the Red Cross. This man, who did not want to be named, was carrying Will when he died.
A truck came and we put in the compañero, who was between life and death. We and three others carried him. From there, we went to see where we could take him for treatment. But at that time, we didn't have help from anyone. Everything got more complicated when it started to rain really hard. Along the way, the compañero died, breathing his last breath at about four or five blocks before arriving at the Red Cross. And we left them at the Red Cross. In my arms, in our arms, the deceased man died. May the compañero rest in peace. And I'm also asking the authorities at the international level that they please look into this because ya basta, enough already. We are fed up with this government.
The gunmen in Santa Lucia were later identified in photographs as local police and former government officials. On the opposite side of town on Friday, a group of approximately 50 gunmen attacked a teachers' protest camp outside of the governor's offices. This teacher survived the volley of gunfire by running into a nearby house.
It was a confrontation in which we were the cannon fodder because we had nothing with which to defend ourselves. At the moment in which we hid in a house, in front of the camp were people armed with shotguns, pistols, and they weren't shooting into the air. They were shooting at people who were running desperately. Among those who were taking refuge in the house were fellow teachers, seniors, and even crying children.
The ambush outside of the governor's office left 2 dead, 15 wounded, and several people are missing. No one has been arrested in connection with the ambush. Although federal troops have occupied most public spaces in downtown Oaxaca, local residents are marching today to try to recuperate their plazas and to protest the federal occupation of their city. In collaboration with Indie Media Oaxaca, I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
Activists in New York City took to the streets today in memory of an independent journalist who was killed over the weekend in Oaxaca. Kat Aaron reports from New York.
Over 250 people gathered at the Mexican consulate in New York City this morning to demand justice for murdered American journalist Brad Will and an immediate end to the violence in Oaxaca, Mexico. Will was shot dead Friday in Oaxaca while covering the months-long teacher strike there for the New York City Independent Media Center. Becca Economopoulos was a friend of Will's.
Last night there was a call from the people in Oaxaca that activists across the world go to local Mexican consulates and shut them down for the day to send a strong message to Mexico that they must pull out the police forces and the government troops from Oaxaca.
Friends of Will's locked themselves to the doors of the consulate and a lamppost. Will's former roommate Brandon Jordan blocked traffic by lying in the street. The New York Police Department blockaded 39th Street, physically pushing demonstrators onto the sidewalks.
Get on the sidewalk.
One demonstrator expressed his grief at Will's death and anger at the police response.
Get out of here! Let's start using.
Becca Economopoulos.
There have been at least 6 or 7 people arrested, and the protest continues. Hundreds of people are here, not just here, but in cities across the country and across the world, in solidarity with the people of Oaxaca, with Brad, and with the others who've been murdered. He has dedicated his life to going to the places where stories are underreported, of people standing up in the face of fear with courage in their convictions that a better world is possible.
Shortly after her interview with FSRN, Economopoulos was arrested, along with Diane Neary, an ex-girlfriend and close friend of Brad Will's. Demonstrations will be held at Mexican consulates in at least 13 other cities, from San Diego to Washington, D.C. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Kat Aaron in New York.
The renowned liberal arts university for the deaf in Washington, Gallaudet, was virtually brought to a standstill during 4 weeks of protests to oust Jane Fernandez, president-designate. But today's students are celebrating victory. On Sunday, Gallaudet's board ousted Fernandez. Nan McCurdy has more from Washington, D.C.
A jubilant atmosphere prevails for students as they end their fourth week of protests and return to class. The Gallaudet board yesterday revoked the appointment of Jane Fernandez, who would have become president in January. Student spokesperson Latoya Plummer through an interpreter.
We want to thank Gallaudet University's Board of Trustees for making the best decision in the best interest of this university.
Student leaders also won the demand for no reprisals, a point that Jane Fernandez would not guarantee. The 133 students arrested for closing down the campus 2.5 weeks ago may be asked to do community service, but will not be expelled. Students questioned Fernandez's leadership abilities based on low graduation rates during her tenure as provost, and protesters complained she did not enact an anti-autism mandate that would increase the faculty's minimum fluency in American Sign Language. Autism is a term akin to racism that describes negative or oppressive attitudes towards deaf people. Linguistics faculty member Deborah Chen Picken through an interpreter.
All of us involved, faculty, staff, and students, recognize that the level of American Sign Language that's used here is unacceptable. We need to raise that level of competency, raise it to the point that it's received a prestigious position and really honored for the language that it is.
Students who say the selection process was flawed have begun to negotiate with the board for a better process next time. Noah Beckman, student body president, through an interpreter.
We will ensure that the search process, which will happen shortly, will follow three basic concepts of justice, transparency, and inclusiveness.
For Free Speech Radio News from Washington, D.C., I'm Nan McCurdy.
The Philippine government is preparing to arm paramilitary forces. The government says those forces would fight against the communist insurgency, terrorism, and crime in the country, but the plan comes amid a spate of extrajudicial killings that have been blamed on government security forces, raising concerns of more violence. Gurley Linao reports from Manila.
Recruitment is already ongoing for nearly 8,000 civilians who will be trained, armed, and deployed all over the Philippines to help the military and police fight enemies of the state. The civilian volunteers would serve as village defense forces who would secure areas already cleared of threats to allow soldiers and policemen to move on to their next targets. Brian Yamsuan, an assistant secretary of the Interior Department, said an executive order signed by President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo in July paved the way for the arming of civilian volunteers. Yamsuan said local governments would be funding the purchase of arms and ammunition for the militiamen, while the police or the military would be training the civilian recruits before they are deployed.
Part of the training will be on human rights, and we will try to make them apolitical. We don't want them to be thinking that because they were given arms, they are civilian volunteer organizations, or they are goons of the mayor, or goons of the governor. We want to train them that their primary role is to defend the republic and defend your locality in this fight against terrorism and counterinsurgency. We will identify their roles to be able for them to have the right psychological mind, also to avoid human rights violations later. Safety nets are a primordial part of this program.
But such assurances are not enough to allay apprehensions that the arming of civilians would only escalate a spate of extrajudicial killings, aggravate the climate of violence in the country, and even worsen the insurgency the government wants to eliminate. Marie Hilao Enriquez, Secretary General of the human rights group Karapatan, warned the government was treading on very dangerous grounds in arming civilian volunteers. She noted that in the past, the use of militiamen failed to wipe out the communist insurgency in the country and only resulted in rampant human rights violations, the proliferation of vigilante groups, and private armies of politicians.
They will only fan and worsen the insurgency that they want to stomp out. They will make it bigger, and there would be more chaos. There will be more killings. There won't be respect for human rights. Actually, this is an admission that they cannot govern. Because they are arming people, we will also take up arms. All the civilians will just take up arms. And what happens? We just shoot each other?
The strife-torn southern region of Mindanao has been identified as a pilot area for the deployment of armed civilian volunteers amid a clamor from local officials for additional security forces, especially after a series of bomb attacks that killed 6 people earlier in the month. Martin Dino, a village chieftain in a suburban city in Manila, said he supports the plan to arm civilians, particularly village security officers who are often the first line of defense against criminals.
Hindi naman lisensya na.
Having a gun should not be a license to shoot anyone. The priority is self-defense. You will only use your weapon if your life is in danger while on duty. If you abuse this position, you have to be punished, especially if you use your weapon for your own interests. You should be the first to go to jail, and if there's a death penalty, you should be executed.
Dino complained that because village security officers are currently armed with only wooden sticks, they are often helpless against criminals who carry high-powered weapons, making their jobs sometimes deadly. The Interior Department said local governments were still preparing their plans for the arming of civilians, and there was still no clear timetable on when the program would be implemented. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Gurley Linao in Manila.
The Federal Communications Commission is reviewing its controversial rules on media ownership. Over the next several months, the FCC is inviting public comment on the rules governing how many television and radio stations one company can own in one market. The commission's limitations on owning full-service broadcast stations and a newspaper in the same market, and its regulation on radio and television station cross-ownership. On Friday evening, there was a hearing in Oakland, California, where the FCC's two Democratic commissioners heard the public's concerns. Eric Klein.
In 2003, under the leadership of Republican Michael Powell, the FCC voted to make it easier for a single company to own a radio station, newspaper, and TV station in the same region. That decision was overwhelmingly condemned by the public, and Congress overturned it. Jeff Perlstein is the executive director of Media Alliance, who helped organize Friday evening's FCC hearings in Oakland, which Pacifica station KPFA broadcast live. Perlstein spoke with the hosts of the KPFA broadcast about what has changed since the last time the FCC held hearings on media consolidation.
There's the technological developments that we've seen since the last round of hearings in 2003. But as significantly to the policy side and technology side, there's also the movement side that really has developed in a really significant way in the last couple of years.
Jonathan Adelstein is a Democratic commissioner with the FCC.
Well, it's actually good news that we're here again because we were able to win last time. The then-chairman Michael Powell proposed the most destructive rollback of media ownership rules in the history of American broadcasting. The public rebelled against it, as you said. The Congress rebelled against it, but most importantly, the courts ruled that the entire item needed to be thrown back to the FCC and we needed to start over again. So here we are starting from scratch, but we're further along than we were last time.
He says that's because the public is more aware now than they were 3 years ago about what's at stake when media ownership is consolidated. Michael J. Copps is the other Democrat on the FCC.
First, I hope we will do no further harm, the old Hippocratic oath. Let's not have rules like Michael Powell wished to have that would have allowed one company in the market to own 3 television stations, 8 radio stations, the already monopolistic newspaper in that market, the cable system and the cable channels. How does that further localism or diversity or empower consumers? So the first thing we have to do is make sure that doesn't happen. If you look at the comments, and we're only starting to look at them now, that have come in attending this new media ownership proceeding, they just came in this week, it's clear to me that these companies want to continue going down the road of consolidation. They're trying to tell you and they're trying to tell the American people maybe they're not as interested in this anymore and they've learned the lessons of localism. Baloney.
Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee welcomed the FCC hearings to her district, downtown Oakland.
This is so important because as we see this push to promote democracy abroad, what we see here in our own country is a shutdown of democracy. And that is what media consolidation is all about. In a real democracy, corporations should not control the airwaves.
One of the many members of the public who addressed the commissioners last Friday evening, James Burns.
There is going to be media ownership limits because that's what's going to save our democracy. I mean, that's what it's down to. And there is no such thing as free speech without government protection. Free speech is a political concept. This thought that the government censors us is not true. Corporations censor us. The government protects us from corporate censorship. Now, the largest contributors to presidential elections is the media industry. Okay, and they make the most money from elections, right? Because people have to buy airtime to get elected. So my idea to democratize the media in this country is to tax advertising. When a corporation buys advertising from a media company, they pay no sales tax on the transaction. Think of that. It would raise $2 billion a year for public access stations in every community, public broadcasting stations across the country, 100 of them.
The deadline for the public to respond to this first round of comments is December 21st. According to an FCC spokesperson, the commission has set no timetable about when it will vote on any new changes. The next public hearing is set for November in Seattle, Washington. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Eric Klein.
Fight the hand that feeds me. I wanna fight that hand so badly. I wanna make them wish.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aaron Glantz, sitting in for Aldo Bogado.
Radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel.